This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
All right, I found something good already, and I think I'm getting a sense of what kind of subreddit this is.
Hi, I'm Rachel Hampton, and you're listening to ICYMI. In case you missed it, Slate's podcast about internet culture. And as you can tell, Madison is not here. I have finally become the supreme. No, she is actually on vacation. Everyone take your PTO before it runs out at the end of the year. So today, we're joined by one of our editors, Allegra Frank. Hi, Allegra.
Hi, Rachel. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you're here, not least because every single time the cat's away, the mouse gets to play, aka Madison's away, and we're going to talk about Tumblr.
I honestly feel like anytime I come in, it's to stop you from having your Joker moment of like, the longer I'm not allowed to talk about Tumblr, the more likely I am going to go rogue and destroy this podcast from within.
Exactly. You're really kind of a backstop to keep me from going full Joker on the podcast and like fully just ripping our team apart. So thank you for that public service.
I'm happy to be the glue.
So we're talking, of course, about Tumblr, but specifically social justice Tumblr. Because what a wild and weird place that raised me. Sorry, Mom. So I'm going to start off light because shit gets a little dicey on social justice Tumblr. But Allegra, what's the most ridiculous social justice post you saw in your days on the platform?
Yeah, so we were talking about this and I was trying to rack my brain of all the things I had deleted from it, of my like from my days of sifting through people getting very angry on my dash. So I was also asking some of my friends and they reminded me of one from 2015. Ooh. It was this post that has become known colloquially as Down with Cis Bus. Because it was this post where someone was telling a story about a time they were like on the sidewalk with their friend and then a bus came up next to them. I don't know if you remember this, but a bunch of people come out of the bus like it's a clown car and they're all wearing shirts that say Down with Cis on them. And then they beat up the person who wrote this post because I guess the person is cisgender and these are people who are not okay with that.
Oh my God, the roving band of social justice warriors.
What was a post that ruined your life on Tumblr?
I feel like the one that I remember the most, back when Lorde put out Pure Heroine, her best album, and Royals was taking over the chart, there was this take, the hottest take I've ever seen, which is that Lorde is anti-Black because of this lyric in Royals where she's talking about like wearing gold jewelry and how she doesn't do that and how like Lorde is talking shit about hip hop because they're super flashy and ostentatious. Therefore, Lorde is anti-Black. But every song's like gold teeth, gray goose dripping in the bathroom, bloodstains, ball gown stretching the hotel room. And I remember thinking, this is just close enough to something that could be true. Because I was on Tumblr when I was a child. So I was just like, maybe. And now as an adult, I'm like, what the fuck was that? But it's like the razor's edge of plausibility where I was like, maybe. And that razor's edge is important for today's topic because we're not talking about social justice Tumblr just because I'm obsessed and Allegra agreed to come on the show or Madison's gone. It's because the lasting impact of the posts that Allegra and I are describing aren't just that they're stuck in our brains for our lives. It's that entire forums like the subreddit Tumblr in Action sprang up around making fun of people or posts that in an, you know, I'm going to say, egalitarian desire to promote tolerance, but went just a bit too far.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, Tumblr in Action and other subreddits like it very quickly transformed from places that poked fun at people saying things like pansexuality is better than bisexuality, or that like calling your introverted friends on the phone is basically a hate crime. Tumblr in Action started as calling that out, and it quickly transformed into this extremely toxic space that declared open season on pretty much anything that vaguely resembled social justice language. And these communities weren't just passively making fun of users. Forums like Tumblr in Action or Social Justice in Action or Kotaku in Action, They Love in Action, engaged in some of the worst targeted harassment I've ever witnessed, most often with trans people or people of color who dare to say, hey, perhaps we deserve rights.
Absolutely. And like when we say targeted harassment, we mean the absolute worst level of harassment you can think of. Like when you think of internet harassment, you're thinking of what happens on these inaction forums.
On today's show, we're going to take you through the history of the R in Action forums and their lasting legacy on the internet. Buckle up, it's a wild ride.
The new Starz series, Mary and George, starring Julianne Moore and Nicholas Galitzine, tells a story almost too outrageous to be true. But shockingly, it is. With next to nothing to her name and looking to elevate her social standing, Mary Villiers sets her handsome and charming son, George, on the path to seduce King James I and become his all-powerful lover. Trust me, you've never seen a mother-son duo like this before. The show is full of wit, scandal, action, and did I mention Julianne Moore? Something this audacious and sexy, as genre-bending as it gets. You won't be able to look away. Watch the season premiere of Mary and George now, only on Starz and the Starz app.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And we're back with Allegra and Tumblr. In the beginning, there was Social Justice Tumblr, which, you know, I refer to, again, as the burning pile of trash that perhaps formed my social consciousness.
Yeah, you were big on Social Justice Tumblr, or at least relative to me. So I'm definitely excited to hear about your coming of age on such a volatile place on the internet.
I spent a lot of time on Tumblr as a teenager because Tumblr had a reputation for all the things that I loved, which was fandoms, porn, and social justice. You know, that's pretty much all I was interested in as a 14-year-old. Sorry, Mom. But in one of our earlier episodes, we interviewed the founder of a really popular social justice blog that I follow called This Is White Privilege. And he basically said that the strength of Social Justice Tumblr is also its weakness, which is that the point of that side of Tumblr was to turn what amounts to very dense theory into like digestible little post that you could reblog and say like, yeah, I relate to that, which is admirable as an exercise, but in practice meant that it turned concepts like privilege and anti-blackness and transphobia and capitalism into these bite-sized nuggets, except the nuggets are made by people who perhaps should have never been in the fucking kitchen, you know?
Exactly. It's just like a very reductive place. But I mean, it's still like formative for a lot of people, for good and bad.
I mean, like I learned a lot of things on Social Justice Tumblr. It's like one of the first places where I really started to understand like my experience as like a Black girl in suburban Texas within a broader context. So Tumblr, you know, I learned some good things, also saw some weird shit there. Because on one hand, you have, like, really basic concepts, like being encouraged to straighten your hair as a Black woman is like a remnant of white supremacy, and like gender and biological sex are not the same thing, and like people refusing to pronounce your name correctly is in fact racist. And then there was also stuff like introversion is a form of oppression, or asking people to shower regularly is fucked up. There was a blog called This Is Clean Privilege. And the issue is that a lot of people like me were children and our brains were mush and we could not distinguish between the first set of things I'm describing and the second set. And so you're just like, all of this is true. And I am learning so many things on this Blue Hell site right next to this porn gift set. But when you're a kid who's just, you know, trying to do the right thing, you kind of just take whatever you're reading as gospel, because you're like, okay, right next to these set of facts that I know are true are these set of conjectures that have the kind of veneer of truth. And it wasn't until I went to college and started taking like ethnic studies classes with professors who had like PhDs in this shit that I realized how much I learned on Tumblr was just not completely wrong, but like 2 to like 50 degrees off base, you know?
Which is a really big margin.
So this is the context of social justice Tumblr and some of its more ridiculous moments, which eventually became a kind of form of humor unto itself. And this is where Tumblr in action and all its various inaction can enter. Like, yeah. Do you want to explain Tumblr in action?
So Tumblr in action started around 2013, really picking up steam in 2014 as a subreddit that was specifically dedicated to sharing at first Tumblr posts, and then it evolved past there to be things on other platforms like Twitter or Facebook. Mm. And specifically the kinds of posts that you were seeing a lot, Rachel, like the social justice warrior posts, whether or not they were more earnest and accurate or really outrageous, super reductive. So no matter how many degrees off from actual critical theory you were probably going to be mocked for those beliefs on Tumblr in action. So users on there, Redditors, would call out a lot of those posts that they categorized as kind of over the top or that they found incredulous, specifically ones that were sort of asserting more progressive views, even if it was something just like, I think racism is bad. Like, they would often find a way to mock that on the forum. And they would just use these posts that they pull from Tumblr as a way to portray Tumblr to the rest of the Reddit community and the internet at large as a place where liberal bias and marginalized beliefs and marginalized people could all just come together and turn into this really laughable or histrionic, almost feral kind of place. So it started with a pretty bad, mean intention, but I think in 2013, as you said, like, a lot of these things we did still kind of find funny. Like, there was still humor to be found. But the fact that Tumblr is that kind of place where you can just say these things has been a big part of why Tumblr in action has existed. Because it's where people who want to make fun of those people go and broadcast their disagreement with these posts, or saying, like, look at these dumbasses, and inviting everyone else to mock these users.
I feel like we need to hear some of those Tumblr in action posts to really kind of get the gist of what we're talking about. So here's YouTuber Felix Fantastique reading a few on her channel.
This person says, how the fuck a white person gonna tell me that others are appropriating my own culture? Sit down. Making tacos is not offensive to any Mexican on this planet. Enjoy them. Literally, WTF are y'all on? Here's another promising one. The title of the post is, all writers have to like their fan bases or they're self-entitled, say people without a sense of irony or self-awareness. And it is a screenshot of a Twitter post, and the woman's name is blocked out, but it says smug writer with pronouns in her bio. Anyway, the tweet itself says, there is for sure a weird thing that happens when dudes think they're writing for other dudes, but then it turns out they're actually writing for women, and instead of being like, wow, okay, neat, love a big passionate audience, they get like, very mad and need to punish. Another good one, a tweet that says, can you be racist against white cis males? And if you can they do anything against it?
So now that y'all kind of know what a typical Tumblr in action post sounds like, and we've given you some context on the history of this forum, when we come back from the break, we're going to discuss what Tumblr in action looks like today and some of the other forums it's influenced in its wake.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Where to Be a Woman is the podcast celebrating the best of women's well-being. I'm Sophia Smith-Gaylor.
And I'm Saatchi Kaur.
And we're on a quest to find out where in the world women are living their best lives.
We're hearing from some incredible women about what their countries are getting right.
And picking the best bits for our female fantasy land. Because you can't build it if you can't imagine it first. Where to Be a Woman from the BBC World Service.
Listen now wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
And we're back. And just a heads up, we are going to be talking a bit about Gamergate towards the end of this episode. So if that's something you don't want to hear, feel free to turn it off now. So Legger, before the break, we talked about the kind of roots of places like Tumblr in action. And basically what started as a way to poke fun at stuff that we are admitting is ridiculous.
Right.
Basically kind of primed the generation of mostly young, mostly white men to immediately and almost violently, I'm not even going to say almost, like violently dismiss anything that had like a whiff of social justice about them. And the mostly white, mostly young is not just something I made up. The Daily Dot wrote a really great piece and cited some statistics about who was mostly looking at Tumblr in action, and it was mostly young white men under the age of 24. Which, you know, in the past few years, we've seen what mostly young, mostly white men under the age of 24 on the internet have wrought. So the way this kind of priming most often manifested was in a deep hatred of trans people and women and people of color. And one of the very standard targets of places like Tumblr in action is the concept of neo-pronouns, which are pronouns outside of she, her, he, him, and they, theirs. And so Tumblr was definitely a place where people would say their pronouns were like bun or something else. And again, Tumblr collapses context, so you can't exactly tell who's trolling. And so Tumblr in action would take the most extremist views and be like, this is indicative of the entire community. And this is what Tumblr in action did. Basically, like the same context collapse that I experienced as a 14-year-old was the same context collapse that Tumblr in action encourages, but in bad faith.
Absolutely. Being a skeptic was almost like a celebrated mode of being, especially during the peak of these forums.
Like, you're just asking questions.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm just a curious person. I just want to make sure we're all on the same page here. And you being the one who dares to ask the questions immediately makes you superior to the ones that you are questioning.
And there was this way in which any kind of appeal to emotion immediately delegitimize anything you were saying. I mean, that's where like the tears come from, or like the special snowflake, where it's like, oh, you're triggered, like your feelings are hurt. Like, you know, it's like, why are you, as someone who doesn't experience this, an expert on this just because you aren't emotionally impacted by it? And that was kind of what these forums encouraged. So I feel like at this point, we've mostly talked about the online dynamics of these forums. But this shit has real world effects too.
Right, which is enter Gamergate. So we mentioned before a little in action brother or sister or neither, probably kin. Brother. Another in action kin. I'm sorry. Thank you for reminding me.
Did it correct?
An in action kin called Kotaku in action. So this was a sort of an in-action kin that was focused not on Tumblr or other social media platforms, but specifically on games journalism and the gaming industry, which, as we all know, has its own huge fandom and community and discourse. And they basically use their forum to assess the work of people whose job it was to review video games or report on industry happenings. Mm. And Kotaku is one of the longest running video game news websites that also has criticism, commentary, videos, reviews, all kinds of content. And as a part of the RIP Gawker Media umbrella, it had a very, I mean, openly liberal slant. And yeah, that's what a lot of readers came to Kotaku for, myself included. But because Kotaku's writers and leadership would say, hey, we don't love that, you know, this game treats women as objects, or we don't love that this game, all the enemies are black. All the people you're killing are black. Like, they would have commentary on like, hey, we need to hold the gaming industry accountable for this kind of content because millions of people are playing these things and are being radicalized to believe it's okay to just treat women like sex toys. And a place like Kotaku in Action was dedicated to posting, sharing those articles and saying, look at these stupid SJWs trying to brainwash us gamers into believing that the liberal agenda should be infecting gaming. Are we not safe? Are we not free? Even in our
is
passion?
This not America?
Exactly. And so Gamergate sprang predominantly from that forum because these sort of self-appointed watchdogs of games journalism, they turned their spears from games journalism as an industry toward the games journalists and games developers and games sympathizers. They turned their ire toward them. They must now find ethics and games journalism and hold
there
all games rights and hold all games journalists to account. And if those games journalists had any potential lapse in ethics as they defined it, they need to be taught a lesson. And that lesson was taught through doxing, as in broadcasting someone's personal information online and sending them targeted abuse, whether it's over the phone, via email, via DM, and taking over their accounts, hacking into all of their accounts, just awful, awful things, basically browbeating people completely off the internet.
And like, to be clear, when these people were talking about ethics and video games journalists, what they were talking about were any games journalist who on any social media platform or in any way publicly espoused any kind of outspoken feminism or anti-racist or like pro-trans views. And so it wasn't even just what you were writing. It was what you said anywhere online.
So tons of people in the gaming industry were kind of ran off the internet or feared for their lives. It was very traumatizing for those people who were attacked for months and months and months. And Kotaku in Action slowly evolved into a forum that was really proud of its efforts and ability to target and harass people. It basically created an entirely insecure landscape for many people online who used to be able to find some sense of safety while sharing these views of equality.
Suffice to say, the Gamergate was a trial balloon for a lot that came after, including what is happening right now with that exact same context collapse, wherein anything that has a whiff of, here we go, wokeness or critical race theory is...
Oh, God.
No, exactly. It's just like, it's... Most people could not, if you asked anyone who hated, who was anti-woke or anti-CRT, what those terms meant, it would be impossible to describe because it is just a way to signal at a broad group of people in the same way that SJW and Tumblr and Kotaku were a way to signal at a large group of people that were to be met with disdain and or violence. And that has huge long-ranging impacts because now everything is critical race theory. Like, integration is critical race theory. And I don't know, man, I feel like integration should probably not be banned in schools.
Right. The inaction forums, the inaction kin... were proof positive that, hey, actually, you can all come together online and take people down.
And it's going beyond these forums. But, you know, despite the kind of grim note of this, there is, I would say, some hope. Or there's some action. We're not still in 2014. I think that platforms as a whole have started to recognize their responsibility in curbing this, even if they haven't quite figured out what those tools should look like and how to implement them. I don't know, like, I feel like in 2014, it felt like there was this thought that platforms just didn't feel like they needed to do anything.
Yeah, we definitely are seeing platforms try and, if not totally take responsibility for the harassment that can fester upon them. Like, they're taking steps toward better protecting their users. Like, we're far more aware of, like, there are ways to protect themselves and that there are other people out there who do believe in what we're saying. And, you know, people on the internet, as we feel more and more empowered to speak our minds against the ills of the inaction kin, maybe one day we'll even have our own subreddit. We'll even have an ICYMI inaction.
Oh my, absolutely the fuck not. Allegra, this is your last time on the show. All right, that is the show. We'll be back in your feed on Saturday, so definitely subscribe. It's free, and Madison will be back, and I will not be talking about Tumblr. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Tell your friends about us. You can follow us on Twitter at @icymi_pod, which is also where you can DM us your questions like, please let Rachel continue talking about Tumblr. And as always, you can drop us a note at icymi@slate.com. Who knows? We might have you on the show.
ICYMI is produced by Daniel Schrader. Our supervising producer is Derek John. We're edited by Forrest Wickman and me, Allegra Frank. Alicia Montgomery is executive producer of Slate Podcasts. And special shout out to Amber Smith. See you online.
Or on our Reddit forum. But today, we're joined by one of our editors, Allegra Fang, who has been on the podcast before, and we're so excited to have her back. Hi, Allegra.
Hi. It kind of sounded like you said Allegra Fang, but I don't want us to retake it. Sorry, the rest was perfect, though.
On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough. This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.
Hello, listener. Dahlia Lithwick here, host of Amicus, that Slate's podcast on the courts and the law and democracy and the rule of law. This May, our team will be publishing a special project that we are calling How Originalism Ate the Law. This neutral and academic-sounding methodology of looking at the law is, in fact, anything but neutral. Originalism is to the conservative legal movement what peanut butter is to jelly. As we're going to show you over the course of this project, originalism has been both cover and calling for conservative justices and judges to radically overhaul the lives of millions of Americans. And while they claim to be the apolitical interpreters of the Constitution and its authors' intents, they have overturned Roe, radically expanded gun rights, and eviscerated voting rights. Across Slate.com and the Amicus podcast, we're going to be tackling questions like, where did originalism come from? Why has it taken over? Are progressive originalists really a thing? And am I allowed to have an opinion on originalism? Spoiler, the answer to that last question, you are. To celebrate the launch of this big project, we are running a special 2-week-long free trial of Slate Plus on Apple Podcasts. As a member, you'll get exclusive episodes from How Originalism Ate the Law, plus ad-free listening to all of your favorite Slate podcasts. Join now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen.